The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
Time. Time is precious, especially when you're up against the clock. The Thomas family is gone, devoured. Alex, sick, transforming. But into what? And can it be stopped? Miss Kuchma, frightened and distraught. And our hero, the detective, now trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Is that a good idea, detective? Do you know what waits for you beyond the mist, beyond the veil? As we sink our teeth into another Tentacle Tuesday. I ask that you stay with me, Lord Piotra. Grab yourself a treat, my frightened children, as we delve deeper into the darkness. Please remember that this podcast does contain images of graphic violence, child endangerment, and my personal favorite, colorful metaphors. It may not be suitable for children under 13. If you like this podcast, I ask that you please subscribe. Now, let us resume our story. Chapter 3, Conflicted Decisions.
Donaldson slumped against the cement wall. His face was pale and a pile of cigarette butts by his brown boots told Stevens everything he didn't want to know. He slowed down and pulled the old Crown Victoria up to him, first lowering the volume on the radio, and then he lowered the window. Donaldson tossed another cigarette onto the mound and leaned in. "Hey, boss." A large cup of coffee met him halfway, and Donaldson smiled. "After smoking a half a pack in 15 minutes, I don't know if I should drink this." "That bad, huh? I've had nightmares more fun. Did you find anything new at the Thomases?" "No, and it's going to take another day to make sure we..." His voice trailed off. Stevens understood. "Hey, do you have any ideas at all?" Rich asked. "Yeah, but I don't think you'll like my theory. Do you remember the Cullen case?" Rich raised an eyebrow. Cullen was a homeless man whose body had to be picked out of the floorboards of the abandoned winter residence. "Yeah, I remember. I'd only been on the force for a few months and..." "Wasn't that case sealed?" Stevens nodded. "Yes, and besides me, only the chief, Frank Giles, the mayor, and a young man named Jonah know, or I should say knew. Only Jonah and I remained from that incident." He could see from Donaldson's face that he was filled with questions, but before he spoke, Stevens climbed out of the car. "Shall we?" They made their way up the ramp, meant for wheeling in dead bodies, and opened a pair of steel-brown doors. The smell of disinfectant and formaldehyde overwhelmed the two men. Donaldson had to turn his head briefly to catch his breath. The white speckled marble floors gleamed from the fluorescent lights. A couple figures stood in the distance in light green scrubs. Another man wearing a blue mask emerged, pulling it down and pulling off the gloves. He engaged the other two before realizing that the two detectives were now in earshot.
"Jesus, those are teeth marks. No knife could have cut the body that way."
"You'll put it down as knife marks. He probably used a serrated blade."
Realizing that the detectives could hear them, the men froze.
"Stevens, Donaldson, I didn't see you."
"I noticed," Stevens retorted with a half-grin. "Mark, what makes you think this wasn't a knife?"
"Well, grab some scrubs and I'll show you."
The body of Michael Thomas looked strange laying on the cold steel table. It was more like the caveman costume in an old Scooby-Doo episode. Limp, empty eyes, and a gaping mouth, frozen in an eternal scream. Mark paused as he put on new gloves. "I have to be very honest with you, gentlemen. This body makes me uncomfortable." Donaldson nodded. It was beyond creepy. He could imagine something crawling its way out of the boy's mouth before slithering across the table. He shuddered.
placing his hand on the mortician's shoulder. Detective Stevens reassured the man. Just do your best, Mark. Unfortunately, I need to see those wounds. The body made a strange flopping sound as he took a pair of large tweezers and pulled and pushed the flesh in a way that he could see the entry wound. Now, taking his scalpel, he pointed. You can see here, just above the belly button and above his hip, a 4-inch, cut. Or you could say torn open. It's definitely an unnatural wound. I think something had gripped the boy and cut into him here, digging into his body, taking it a chunk at a time. Like taking a bite, swallowing, and going deeper. There's another slice here near the ribcage under his arm, and a third near the back of his ribcage. Donaldson turned away and the mortician covered the body with a sheet laying at his feet. Detective, this goes against everything I know about wounds and entry points. Knives don't make incisions like these, nor do they suck flesh and bone out. Off the record, I swear that something tore into this poor boy and ate him from the inside out while he was alive. On the record, the detective asked. Well, Jack says we can't be using imaginary monsters. Not if we want to keep our jobs. That's fine, Mark. Do as he says. But detective, no buts, Mark. Pulling him aside and out of the earshot of Donaldson. Listen, honestly, I agree with you. But this is the 20th century, and the only boogeymen are human. We're recording this as a home invasion by some kids on Flacco. Warren, I think that's a bad idea. The detective could hear the deep concern in his voice, but the next thing he said froze his blood. I mean, I know about the Cullen case. Stopping in his tracks and slowly turning back to Mark, and then speaking in a hushed, angry tone. Those files were sealed. How the hell did you get your hands on them? The doctor held up his hand in objection. It was Dr. Giles. He told me about it one night over a glass of whiskey before he died. I went back and read all the notes and theories he had on the case, and well, this is the same, isn't it? Mark, we've been friends for a long time, right? You trust me, right? Yes. If you ever breathe a word to anyone about this case, I'll have you arrested and tossed into jail for the rest of your life. Do you understand? No, I don't, Warren. Now pleading with him. People have the right to know. Mark, know what? People? Humanity? They don't believe in monsters, demons, and devils. For heaven's sake, I'm not even sure they believe in God. But Warren, if they... What? If they find out what? The return to their faith? Mark, these people are more interested in their phones, playing games and posting on the internet. No, they wouldn't believe Jesus Christ himself if he came down and slapped them in the head with his own cross. Then, what should I do? What should we do? Frankly, Mark, pray. The mortician looked at him as he pushed past and signaled to Donaldson, who was still rinsing out his mouth at the water fountain, that it was time to go. The detective paused as he walked outside of the county morgue. He regretted being a little too harsh with his friend. Mark's a good man, he really does believe, but that wasn't the issue here. This goes much, much deeper than that. Knowing and understanding, it leads to suffering. He thought about his lost friends, Chief Reynolds, Frank Giles, and Mayor Ralph Simmons. Their lives had never been the same after the veil had been lifted. Their families haunted and hunted, either leading to divorce or untimely deaths, and sometimes even suicide. He himself had lost his wife and son 2 years ago in a mysterious car accident. The simple fact is, they didn't want you to know. They want docile, stupid sheep. He looked at his dumb phone. He had switched to it when he saw how they were using our technology against us, how easily people believed information found online, or how easy it was to bully without a face, seduce without getting too close, and lay traps for people who trusted the words they read. He wondered how many children will take to get hurt or lost, how many lives will have to be ruined before people begin to realize that the web was a web of deceit. The more time spent there, the less time with family, friends, and God. A slow poison of corruption, a slow death to community, and a rise of divisiveness. The detective called out to Donaldson as he opened the door to his cruiser. We should get back to the Thomas house and see if we can find out anything new now that it's daylight. Right, I'll meet you over there, Donaldson replied.
The detective flipped open his phone.
Still no reply. A fear crept into him. What if Jonah was dead? What if he was alone in this nightmare? He watched as Donaldson drove off ahead of him. Was it a good idea to keep him on this case? He still had a life, a family to worry about. He arrived at the Thomas residence a few moments after Rich. The house seemed even more monolithic against the rising sun, its rotting exterior highlighted by the falling shadows that seemed to wrap themselves around it in an evil shroud. Was it this bad last night? Donaldson asked. No, I don't think it was. This is getting weirder by the minute, Donaldson scoffed.
Once again, the detective found himself conflicted. He looked at Donaldson and made a decision.
Hey, Rich. Yeah, I think I want you to pull yourself off the case.
What? Why the...
Warren could see the hurt in his eyes. Listen, if this is anything like the Cullen case, you could be putting that young family of yours in serious danger.
Danger? Why? From what? Warren, come on. I've been your partner for 3 years.
The detective sighed.
I know, Rich. I know what I'm asking. Listen, pal, you're going to have to give me a real reason to...
Rich's phone rang, interrupting the men. It was his wife, Katie.
Yeah, Kat, what's up?
He gave Warren a quick, worried look and then hung up his phone.
What did Kat need?
She said there's a black sedan with tinted windows parked about a half a block from the house. She noticed it after walking Andrea to the bus stop.
You should hop back in that cruiser of yours and check it out.
Yeah, I guess I should.
The two men looked at each other in an awkward silence. Rich turned and headed towards his car.
This conversation isn't over, Warren.
Warren nodded as Donaldson climbed into his cruiser. The detective waited for him to pull away and then headed towards the house.
The thorny thrush that grew along the walkway crept onto the broken stone pathway that led to the now decaying oak doors. Yellow police tape lined the path, cordoning off everything but the doors themselves.
Officers Garcia and Schmidt met him on the top step. He tipped his cap to them. Officers?
Hey, Detective, Garcia said.
Schmidt nodded and looked at the crumbling structure.
How much longer do we need to stand here, sir? This place is creeping me out.
He could understand the concerns. Only the shell of the house seemed to remain, and it gave off an evil vibe. Your relief should be here soon. Until then, I'm afraid you'll need to remain here. I don't want any trick-or-treaters, or worse, curiosity seekers coming here. The two officers frowned, but understood.
You're not going in there by yourself, are you?
The detective turned on his flashlight and pushed open the oak door.
It moaned as it swung back, as if in agony.
Schmidt gulped.
Do you want me to come in there with you?
No. As I said, stay here. I'll be fine. Just keep your radios on channel 3 just in case I need you.
Copy.
He stepped into the foyer.
The chandelier still hung tentatively from the ceiling, the body of Wendy no longer in its grasp.
The chalk outline remained around the etchings on the floor, still stained in black from her blood. A menacing presence pushed against him as he moved deeper into the home. He passed under the archway between the rooms. He aimed his flashlight at the stone fireplace. It grinned at him from across the room. It seemed more like a doorway than a fireplace. 6 feet high, 6 feet across. Its mantle a charred alabaster etched with strange markings, similar to the ones that lined the floor in the foyer. He wondered about their astronomical nature as he traced them with his finger. They extended from the floor until they reached a small statue sitting on the mantel. It was a curious-looking thing, a lone tentacle-shaped stalk with several eyes extending off the tip. The detective froze, placing his hand on his gun. A shadow moved from across the room, and he quickly redirected his flashlight. Rising up from the floor and standing against the archway was an ominous 7-foot-tall figure. In deep blue and black robes, lined with golden symbols that reminded him of the runes on the tablet. A pale face, painted or tattooed, grinned at him like a cat eyeing a mouse. Stumbling backwards, the detective immediately drew his gun.
Good evening, detective,
the man said, his voice rumbling through the room like distant thunder.
I didn't mean to startle you.
He ignored the man, his thoughts more concerned about the two officers charged with watching the house. Switching off the safety on his gun and keeping the flashlight focused, the detective moved to a more desirable position. Grabbing his radio, he called out,
Garcia? Schmidt? Come in.
Garcia here. Go ahead. Go for Schmidt. Everything okay, boss?
Yeah. Fine. Make sure you men stay alert.
Copy that. 10-4.
The two men chimed back, completely unaware that this man had managed to elude them. Finally, turning his full attention to the unwelcome company, he spoke. Who the hell are you?
You may call me High Priest Tolan Rune from the Temple Iona. I came to reclaim an artifact that I accidentally left behind. Maybe you've seen it. It's a stone tablet.
Mister, the detective began, before the High Priest immediately interrupted him.
That's High Priest Rune. Thank you.
Not trying to hide his anger, Warren shot back at him. High Priest. Whatever. I don't freaking care. This is a crime scene. I don't know who the hell you think you are, or how you got past my men, but I should have you arrested. The High Priest frowned.
Yes. So the rumors are true. I had heard that some of my poor sheep had been victimized. It's truly unfortunate.
Unfortunate? Their family was brutally slaughtered.
Indeed. Now, detective, my tablet?
Are you kidding me? That's your level of compassion?
I assure you, detective, I am deeply saddened. But that artifact holds great significance. It is highly sensitive and extremely valuable. I really need to ensure its safety.
Well, isn't that just ducky? Your little artifact is locked up in the evidence locker at my precinct, where it will be staying until I can close this case.
That, the High Priest scowled, cannot be allowed. You will return it to me.
You know what? I've had enough of you. Keeping one eye on Rune, the detective pressed the talk button on his radio and called out, Garcia! Schmidt! Get in here now! At that, the High Priest turned his back on him and faded into the shadows.
Return the tablet to me, detective. Or else.
Moments later, two men rushed in with the guns drawn. Scanning the room, they could see that he was alone. Detective? Garcia asked. The detective waved them off. Forget it. Just go back to your post. I'm done here for now. The two officers looked at each other. Both were confused by what had just transpired. The detective reholstered his gun and headed back out under the archway. He opened the phone and dialed the precinct. Montgomery Police Station. Officer Hicks speaking. Can I help you? Hicks, it's Stevens. Let me speak to the chief.
One moment. I'll pass you through.
Chief Henry Bell. Chief, it's Stevens. Yeah, Stevens, go ahead. I need you to unseal the Cullen file for me and read it. The Cullen file? Your former boss and my best friend told me under no circumstance I should ever look at that case. I know. It was something he and I decided and Mayor Simmons agreed to. However, I was given permission to allow you to read it if I ever found myself in desperate need. And now you're telling me? I'm in desperate need. Well, it's password encoded, so I'm sending you the password now. It's X99 Angelus 9 Reprobi. I'll be there in roughly 30 minutes. It was something he didn't want to do. And now he had no choice. He couldn't fight them on his own. And with no response from Jonah, he needed allies. He could only pray that God would forgive him for putting his friends and colleagues at risk.
The detective. He's been forced to change his mind. As he reveals what lies in the darkness, will the chief believe him? Will he get the support he so desperately needs? The help to fight against the cult of Ikyatsu and evil Master Rune? And what will it cost him? Tune in next Tentacle Tuesday to find out.